Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and this is the Limark Technical Net. Limark Technical Net has been going on like this every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Since 1982. So sit back and relax, and I'll tell you the usual URLs and email addresses in a sec. Once again, if anyone has any mailbag questions and they can't get on the technical net, or if they would like to propose a puzzle or a topic, or if they've read or seen something about space and they'd like me to tap Paul on the shoulder and ask him to take a look at it and comment, the email address to get in touch with us is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. I will provide the interesting links for every single episode, and there are already some links up on the link page, and you can get to it by typing into your browser roy.ac2gs.com. Again, roy.ac2gs.com. There's a chat room available if you're so inclined. You can either go to the Limark website, and the link is available there, or you can just type into your browser chat.ac2gs.com, and it'll take you to the chat room. And as always, we stream this audio on the Internet, so if you have any friends that can't pick up the repeater signal, either through radio waves or Echo Link or IRLP, you can just tell them to type into their browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that will give you a streaming audio link. And I always like to remind people that there are archives of the Technical Net that go all the way back to September of 2006, thanks to Mike, KC2NJI, and his website, which is amateurradio.tv. So please avail yourself of Mike's wonderful archives and listen to old audio tapes of audio files of Dick and John and Mel and all the great minds, Eric, that have passed by and shared with us some of their insight into this hobby. Let me drop for a sec. Okay, as always, I like to tell people how we're planning to do this each Sunday night. Unfortunately, Andy will not be available for Andy's Corner this Sunday. Hopefully, he'll be returning in the near future. Maybe next Sunday. We'll see. So we're going to start with general questions of a technical nature. I'll ask for first names and call signs, put you on the list, and we'll talk about it between all the people listening and myself. Then, somewhere around 10:15, give or take, Paul will come by with the SpaceNet report, and that'll take us to the 11 o'clock period where we will wish you all well and say good nights. So, we're open for any topics or any questions or any comments. If you have any of those, please give me your first name and your call sign.
John, November 2, Zulu Charlie.
John recognized. Anyone else want to go on the list tonight? Okay, I put you down after 9, Wesley. Anyone else want to put their name on the list tonight? Please give me your first name and your call sign. Okay, hopefully there'll be people coming by later on to ask questions or bring up topics. John, into ZC, what's your question or topic tonight?
Okay, thank you, first of all, for acknowledging me. Question is this. Topic is technical. J- just recently bought a new linear amplifier, and as the story goes, everything is working okay until, matter of fact, just about this week, a few days ago. So I haven't used it that much, but I had it for about a month. And all of a sudden, I started to get reports that when the linear was on, the audio was breaking up, and one gentleman said that it sounded like there was feedback. Let me just unkey a minute. So I began to investigate it, and what I found, the first peculiarity was that this was only happening on 40 meters and all of a sudden on 6 meters. 40 and 17. But it wasn't happening on 20 meters. Now, this is with the linear. Was not happening on 20 meters. And I did also get a shock on the microphone. Not a real bad one, but I definitely got some little feedback shock there. So long story short is I did some measurements, and I was getting some ohmage readings on the antenna for 40 meters. And all of a sudden, I was no longer able just to tune it even from the rig. So I replaced the antenna, matter of fact, just today, finished the antenna, and it tunes up nice, SWR, you know, under 2 to 1, about 1.5, 1.6. Again, though, when I put on the linear, I get this feedback. And I have a Yaesu FT950. I'm actually hearing a clicking coming from inside of the radio itself now. So the first thing, I'm just wondering if anyone has any ideas on what this may be.
Okay, very good, John. I'll open it to the audience. So let me... Unfortunately, it's sort of the amateur radio version of the computer response to any kind of question of a problem. Did you try turning it off and on? Which is, have you tried putting some RF chokes in your lines, both in the power input to the radio, the transmission lines? Have you kind of covered stuff in ferrite clamps?
No, I had not. What I originally suspected was, even though I had a Balland that was rated at 1,500 watts, and this linear pushes the max, I figured it blew out the Balland. That was my thought. So, you know, I eliminated the Balland, you know, put up a new 40-meter dipole, and again, so the radio tune is good. I didn't think of this with the ferrites because I was assuming since all of a sudden the antenna wouldn't tune up even to the 100-watt radio, something burnt out. Whether that's in the amplifier, which I'm hoping not, but something somewhere burnt out. But I'm open to that.
Okay, so let's do this in steps. Have you connected the antenna directly to the transmitter?
I've connected the antenna through the linear to the transmitter. When the transmitter is in standby, the linear is, you know, not in play, and it just switches to the antenna, and I use it without the linear operating, and the audio is fine, no problems.
Okay, so you don't have this problem with 40 and 17 with the linear amplifier just on bypass, right?
Exactly. That is correct.
Okay, what about, have you ever tried putting the linear online but decreasing the gain all the way down so that it's not really putting out much more than the amount of watts that your transmitter does.
Yeah, I'm using the Expert 2KFA, so I don't have that option. What I have done is putting on low power and, trying to, and then I'm just going to build my way up. But right away with low power, it starts. And again, I just want to say the peculiarity really here for me is I was ready to say there's a problem with the linear, but it doesn't happen on 20 meters, which still may be a problem with the linear. That's why I'm throwing it out to you guys. I just wanted to put that in there in play also.
Did someone have a comment? I thought I heard someone make a comment. It was a little on the noisy side. If you want to try again, please do. Okay, maybe I misunderstood. I have a Expert Systems 1.3K, so they're kindred spirits. What I was getting at is, yes, it has a high, low, and medium settings. And it also kind of, depending upon your radio, it can send the signal back to the radio to optimize and maximize it. But you should be able to bypass that and just set the drive output very, very low. All these Expert systems have great gain. So the question would then be, could you possibly cut the gain on the transmitter to the point where the linear amplifier is outputting at the roughly the same wattage that the no sound distortion was taking place on those two bands?
I think there would have to be some real configuration in the software to do it. I didn't see anything like that in the manual. I don't think that's a readily available, option. It's possible, but I never came across it. I read the manual. I didn't see anything like it. And matter of fact, in one of my conversations with the fellow I bought it from, brand new, it's just supposedly low, medium, and high.
Okay, if you turn on your Expert systems, I think you will see a display during standby. And the middle indicator says CAT, and then underneath it has hopefully the radio that you're using to control it with. So that's the CAT protocol. So if you have it plugged in to the command line of the radio, and you have it selected to the proper CAT configuration, that's what sets the output gain at maximum for the low, medium, and high settings.
Yeah, that's exactly the setup we got.
Yeah, you can also set the gain for each band in the configuration. So you could set it low or you could set it high. So it's not that difficult to get into the menus and twirl it back. What I'm getting at is the possibility. It might simply be the simple approach that the Expert systems is broken in some way, that there's some kind of filter that kicks in for those bands and it's malfunctioning in some way. But I'm trying to kind of look beyond that and see if what might be happening is that there's some common mode reflection that doesn't really provoke any problems until you get your power output high enough that the bounce back on the common mode just kind of sprays your radio with RF and gives you distortion via that way.
Okay, well, yeah, that's what I'm here for, to listen to any kind of, input anybody has. And again, it was working fine, even high power, up until about a week ago. So, you know, for everything to be fine, even on high power, and then now all of a sudden on low I get this, I'm thinking it's a feedback because I'm seeing it in the radio. Like I said, I'm hearing a relay click. Might even be the tuner. Sounds like the automatic tuner in the FD950 clicking. And that's it. I didn't. And like I say, at one point I did feel some a shock on the microphone there. So I don't know. Do you feel it still could be a problem with something electronically with the linear, even though on 20 meters that problem doesn't exist?
I would think that it's possible because every time you switch bands with these things, there are different tuning networks that are switched into and out of in the circuits. And so, again, it's possible that some of these components for these band filters are acting weird. They got hit with some electricity. They got hit with too much heat. But again, you know, that's one of those things that you're basically going to have to send it back for repairs if that's the case, as opposed to if you're just getting a lot of reflect, power going forward and back. So another little question, do you happen to have a watt meter that can read reflected power?
No, I don't. I don't have that. As you know, on the linear, it gives you, the SWR, and on the Yaesu rig itself, it does. But no, I don't have a separate watt meter that reads reflective power.
Okay. Another point, what's actually doing the tuning as far as antenna tuner? Do you have a separate antenna tuner? Do you have a built-in antenna tuner to the expert systems? And if so, can you disable the antenna tuner on the radio? Because you really shouldn't have more than one antenna tuner in your circuit.
Yeah, there's a internal antenna tuner in the linear and in the radio. From what I was reading is you don't want them both going at the same time. In other words, setting them off at the same time. But I'm just imagining this is standard. Like you say, all these radios today running with the CAT cable have this internal tuner.
Yeah, but usually a lot of times there's no circuitry in the linear amplifier to turn that aspect off. You have to turn it off at the menu selection because you don't want two tuners fighting against each other. It never ends well. So I would just kind of double check your menu selection if that particular radio can turn off its auto tuner. That kind of takes one variable out of this equation.
Okay. Yeah, I can look on that. If the FT950 actually lets you disengage the antenna tuner, I was under the thought, and correct me if I'm wrong. Once you tune the antenna, or the rig tunes the antenna, then that's it. There's no further adjustments made. It just its reactance is set, so to speak, and that was it.
Well, theoretically, yes, but if you have two different devices both trying to tune the antenna, sometimes they can kind of get a feedback mechanism going on both of them. One will detune, the other one will retune, then it will detune and retune, and it goes round and round and round. So if you're seeing a lot of chattering and such in the boxes of the radio with the antenna tuner trying to do its magic, it probably is not a good thing. It should be turned off so that it doesn't have a chance to kind of screw around with the settings that your expert system is more than capable. The Expert Systems antenna tuner is usually much more, has a much more significant amount of impedance matching capability.
Okay. Yeah, I'll take a look at the menu then in the and the manual to see if that's possible to disengage the FT950 there tuner. I'm curious though. Would you think wouldn't that be a problem though that would show up? And I know sometimes they don't, but would just show up right away instead of a couple months down the line?
Well, not necessarily. It sort of depends upon the impedance at these frequencies that your antenna is providing. And, connections can get a little flaky. Water can get into coax. Different things can lead to a slight change in resonances. And sometimes antenna tuners can't tune to a certain impedance. And I had a situation at one point where I was not able to tune up to 10 meters on a fan dipole, and I put an extra length of coax, about 3 feet more, that rotated the impedance just enough so that my antenna tuner could actually tune it again. And I tried disconnecting the 3 feet, and it couldn't tune it again. So it was definitely the 3 feet that were doing it. So there's a lot of variation and variable nature of antennas, unfortunately. Weather can affect them to a degree. All kinds of corrosion certainly can have an effect.
Yeah, I hear you, and I definitely am suspicious that it's been rainy and overcast these last couple days. That did enter my mind there. All right, I don't want to take up, too much of your time there. Appreciate your input. So as of right now, I think what I heard you loud and clear. I'm going to look into disabling that a tuner, if that's possible. And going back, RF chokes, you mentioned that originally. Do you think that's still something that should be explored, or any other ideas?
Well, again, RF chokes is a simple solution that solves an amazing number of problems. I knew a guy who at a certain output, everything was fine, and beyond a certain power output, RF would get in through his microphone cable. And simply the very simple and not long-term solution of taking some runs of microphone cable and coiling them up and increase the impedance and act as a quick and dirty RF choke. So I would certainly suggest that you try to put an RF choke on your microphone input, especially since you're having an audio problem. And if you have extras, you could just put them around, see if anything works, and then you could remove some and do trial and error that way. I would also look into seeing if you could drop down the gain of your Expert Systems and see if there's a magic output that doesn't cause these strange clickings and audio problems. Because if you found that to be the case, then that would be very useful.
Yeah, well, like I say, it happens on low power. So, I mean, are you talking about a diagnostic? I mean, I wouldn't want to say I solved the problem by taking a 2K amplifier and tuning it down so I only pushed out 200.
Well, it would just give you more information. Now, when you said that it was low power, do you mean that it was really low power, or it was the low setting of a 1500 watt linear amplifier, which isn't that low?
Yeah, it was the low power on the linear amp, which is probably about, about 450.
Yeah, so theoretically, it is possible that you have enough reflections getting back into your shack, not enough at 100 watts, but when you rev it up to 300 or 400 watts, it's just enough to leak back into the audio circuit and wreak havoc with your audio.
Okay, and also, like I say, you know, I'm really paying attention to it now. I did hear some clicking coming from the FT950. You know, when you put on the automatic tuner, that they're, you know, they, but it was just a tit, and I'm assuming it was that relay. You know, it was coming from the same side of the rig where you know when you're tuning it is so. Maybe it is that. I'm just the biggest problem for me is these things are so heavy and so much to ship. You know, just shipping it back is the real nightmare. So we'll have to see. But thank you very much for all your input.
Yeah, someone's trying to participate, but your signal is about 95% noise. So if you could redirect your antenna or boost your output, well, you know, whatever you can do, I'd appreciate it. Also, John, do you have a dummy load? Maybe you could just try out and see that if you put it down into a dummy load that's a good 50-ohm impedance that's going to kind of limit any kind of RF any place but inside that dummy load, just to see if all the clicks go away.
No, but I hear what you're saying, and I can, you know, I'll order one. That's a good idea.
Yeah, it's always good to have a dummy load. I mean, some are better than others. I have an MFJ that runs the full, you know, 1,500 watts. It has a fan in it. I would have liked if they had designed it with either a switch or a thermal switch so that when the resistor heated up, it would kick in the fans, but it just has a power plug to it. But, it uses a ceramic massive resistors. They come packed so that they don't break separately, and then you insert them in the dummy load. I think it's a good investment. It's a good tool to have if you're going to have a linear amplifier.
Absolutely. All right. Okay. I guess I'll just have to look into those two things, and I guess give Expert a call, see if they've come across this before, and take it from there. You know, maybe another option is I'll bring the linear over somewhere else to a club or something like that and try it out on that radio, that antenna, see if the problem happens there.
Yeah, that certainly is an option. Unfortunately, in these COVID-19 days, they're few and far between. The guy who runs the distributorship, I think, lives down in Texas. He's a very pleasant guy. I mean, I talked to him at least once or twice, and he's the type of guy who keeps you on the phone for a half hour. So I'm sure he'll kind of give you the benefit of his experience. He started off in this particular brand by being the guy who repaired it for the guy who was doing the importing.
Yeah, I had one or two conversations with him during the purchase, and I do know he's a very knowledgeable guy, without a doubt, very knowledgeable. And, you know, again, the problem is trying to diagnose these things over the telephone or over the radio or whatever. All right, listen, thank you very much for all your input. I'll definitely, you know, put it into play and see what comes up. I'm just wondering if it could just be the weather and you know, causing this, you know, it might be wishful thinking, though. Listen, thanks again. This November 2, Zulu Charlie, we'll be on the side listening.
AC2GS. Well, you're welcome, John. And in addition, I feel like I should get a piece of the action with this There's a new VNA, basically antenna analyzer. So for people out there who don't have an antenna analyzer, don't have a VNA, and they have an extra $50 sitting around doing nothing, Nano VNA makes a very nice VNA. They're small. They come in two sizes. There's a less expensive 2.5-inch screen LCD VNA. They go up to 3 gigahertz. And for an extra, I think, about $25 to $30, they have a 4-inch LCD screen. And you can do almost everything you'd want to do with an antenna analyzer or a VNA with it. So, you know, for $50 for the small size or $80 for the large size, I think it's the best bargain for anyone who's playing around with antennas. It's always nice to sweep your antenna and get a good idea of where it's resonant and where it isn't resonant.
I've got the MFJ-259C. How would you compare it to that?
This is, well, it has much wider range as far as I'm aware. This goes from, I think, 50 kilohertz to 3 gigahertz. And it's a graphic interface. So if you like meters, which I believe that model, you basically are looking at meter movements, this is all graphic user interface. If you like computers, you can plug it in to a computer and output a bigger image for you to play around with. So I think that this is kind of brave new world technology. Now, sometimes it intimidates people. I understand that. But it's really bleeding edge. It doesn't take the place of a $5,000 VNA. It doesn't have the dynamic range of things like that. But almost none of us have $5,000 to spend on a VNA like that.
Yeah, one thing I wish I would have just upgraded a little more, because, you know, it's like $350 for the 259C. They go to 6, and I think down. Well, you know what? I got it here. Let's see. What does it go down to? It goes from, it goes to 1.1 megahertz to 4.7. So, the low range. So it goes up to 230 down to 1 megahertz, 1 to 230. But it does, the one you're talking about has the sweep, if I heard you right, and that is a function I like. And does that have it where you can just set it and it will go through all the frequencies and then just come back with a graph telling you where the resonance is at?
Yeah, that one has it. A lot of the newer models have it. I have a RegExpert A600 that goes to 600 megahertz. I have a AIM 430 Array Solutions that does HF and VHF that does that as well. So a lot of the newer VNAs I have this wonderful ability. Not only can you sweep any bandwidth that you're interested in, but you can have it do a refresh so that you could tweak it and adjust it. The RigExpert even has a weird feature where it will send a very low signal locally so that you could go, say, up on a roof and tune to a particular frequency for the RigExpert. And as you tune the antenna up on the roof, the signal from the low intensity signal the RigExpert sends up, you can tell when it's closer and closer to be tuned. So there's a lot of nice features in different devices, but like I said, for $50, I don't know how you can go wrong.
Yeah, what's the name and model number of that again?
It's called a Nano VNA. They make two versions. The older version only went up to about 1 gigahertz. The new version goes up to 3 gigahertz. They sell them in two different screen sizes. One is the less expensive is 2.5 inches. The bigger ones are 4 inches. They make them with SMA attachments, and they also make them with N attachments. So depending upon what you prefer and what adapters you have available, I got the one that's N connectors, because if I want to use them for UHF or even SMA, I have adapters for that.
Okay, very good, very good. Once I finish with this, I've learned my lesson. I don't want to take on too many new projects. Hey, one last thing. What about grounding? Could a bad or an insufficient ground? I'm in an apartment building, so I don't have the luxury to ground the linear to a water pipe. Would that also be a factor?
Not particularly. I mean, grounding is more important for getting rid of static charges and such. It doesn't really provide that much lightning protection. There might be some little degree of that, but you can get into more problems with grounding than not grounding. Every so often, I'll have to dissuade someone from using the electrical ground from the utility line as their ground for their equipment. It's better than nothing, but you can't really rely on it for RF equipment and such, because you don't know how far you are from the actual ground. There could be a great deal of impedance. There could be circuits that are bleeding current into it. So I try to dissuade people from ever trying to ground their systems using electrical outlets. I tell people, if they can't put a proper ground into the ground, then, as you mentioned, the cold water pipe. If you can't do the cold water pipe, some people find success in the hot water pipe. It's a little problematic because the hot water pipe, might be near gas lines and such, and people are worried about electrical, lightning and such, but I don't know of anyone who actually has gotten into trouble with that. But, grounding is good, but I get the sense, unless there's some kind of tuning circuit that's out of alignment on the expert, that there's a lot of common mode RF that's just kind of permeating your shack under certain circumstances. It might not be all of the bands, because some of the bands are better for your antenna and don't reflect it back, but some, like the 40 and 17, might just reflect back enough RF to cause you the problems.
Okay, interesting. And I don't want to be redundant, but I just have to. I'm sorry, I can't help it. And you do believe, if we're going to go with that assumption, that could just happen spontaneously for the reasons that we mentioned, being rainy and moisture in the air, that it could just, everything could be fine, and then all of a sudden it could just take that turn.
Unfortunately, yes. There's a lot of environmental factors that affect radio transmissions. There are corrosion. Like I said before, even weather conditions. I have equipment that does auto-tuning, and you can actually select the weather, and it has different protocols for different weathers. I haven't had to avail myself of that quite yet, but it does seem to tweak things. And unfortunately, some coaxes do soak in moisture, and that has a significant effect on their insertion losses. There are some types of coax cable that are, they're plastic, but they're kind of circular plastic, so a lot of the dielectric is air. And if water migrates into past the jacket, I've known people who've replaced the coax cables where they open them up and the thing pours out water. I'm not saying that's happening to you, but, those things can start and have a little effect, too.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. What I originally suspected, I have one, two, three antennas. I have the 20-meter going coax direct onto it, and then I had a ballon in the 40 and 17-meter, and I just originally suspected, since the 20-meter was working fine, that the ballons in both of those other antennas just failed. And again, you know, you're dealing with coils and humidity in the air, arcing can happen, and that's what I thought. And like I say, the antenna itself all of a sudden had a problem where it wouldn't, on 40, it wouldn't tune there, and I found a very, very slightly detectable short. You know, maybe it wasn't, but something was there that you know, a measurement, and so, you know, I just replaced it, and that took care of that, and like I say, now she's tuning up on 40 again. But they both went at the same time. The 17-meter, which is a separate antenna, separate ballon, and the 40-meter went at the same time, and that had a ballon, which I took out.
Well, that's interesting. I tend not to believe in just coincidence. Let me ask, what kind of ballon were they? Were they just one-to-one ballons or some other impedance-matching ballon?
Yeah, they were one-to-one, one-to-one.
Okay, so basically they were just acting as a glorified RF choke to kind of limit the amount of common mode reflected back from the feed point. So, again, it doesn't hurt you any to put a couple of the chokes. I always use, I think they're WA2DU, I lose track. It's a guy that came up with the idea of just stringing together about six big fat RF chokes at just off the feed point in the coax, and I kind of put it onto all of my antennas. It's relatively inexpensive. The whole thing costs maybe about $30, and they're kind of rugged, and they help. They block some common mode coming back on me.
Now, you're talking about the feed point to the antenna or the feed point coming into the rig or the linear?
You could do it both. Because this is sort of a cheap, poor ballon, it's located at the feed point itself. But if you're concerned that some common mode is getting radiated someplace and then coming on to the length of your coax, you can apply more RF chokes. RF chokes aren't going to really undermine your signal in any way. They only affect common mode currents, and all the stuff that you're interested in is differential mode. So, you know, the only thing that putting too many ferrite RF chokes will do is cost you a couple bucks for the chokes. Doesn't really cost you anything else.
And the ones you were using, are those the ones that just clip right over to the outside of the coax?
Yes, those are the most convenient. I guess theoretically, if you're going to put your own plugs on, you could get regular toroidal closed and slip them on. But I always found it just more convenient. I get a length of glue heat shrink tubing. I clamp on about five or six in a row, drop in the heat shrink tubing, blast it with a heat gun, and it's good for decades.
Okay, I didn't follow everything you said there, okay. I'll look online into it then. It sounds like you had your own way of... I don't know if you were talking about making your own or doing something else there, but I'll definitely look into that. That definitely sounds worthwhile.
Okay, I mean, check into it. Again, I think it's WA2DU is the gentleman that came up with this idea. And basically, it's just about five or six hefty RF chokes that are clamped, and then you protect it from any weathering or shifting position by putting over it a length of a heat shrink tubing. You know, there are 2-to-1 and 3-to-1 heat shrink tubing with a little glue inside, and then you just kind of cover up the ferrite chokes with it, blast it with a heat gun, and it shrinks down and fits over the coaxial cable. So it kind of weatherproofs it and stabilizes its position.
Okay. I'm in an apartment building, so I have limited access to the roof and not much. So if I can do it, you know, coming out of the rig, coming out of the linear, that'd be the way I prefer. If I understood you correctly, it really it would accomplish the same thing. Did I understand what you said?
I got an extra A in there. It's W2DU. If you do a search for W2DU, you'll see loads of pictures. It's basically a 1-to-1 choke ballon. So instead of whatever it is that was giving you problems at the antenna feed point, this is a quick, easy one that I've found to be very useful. I mean, I'm sure there are guys out there who have much more expensive ballons, and if you need a 4-to-1 or a 49-to-1 or a 64-to-1, then certainly this isn't the ballon for anyone. But if you just need basically a 1-to-1 choke ballon, that's a good thing to put up on the at the feed point. You could also, in addition, whether you do that or you don't do that, you could still stick a bunch of RF chokes close to your Aegis in your shack and kind of block it from coming in past that point.
Yeah, I'm getting more and more interested in this as we speak, because if it's coming back into the rig and I put some RF chokes there between the rig and the linear, that might solve the problem. What do you think?
Well, again, it sort of depends upon where it's getting into what. My gut sense is, because of the audio, could be wrong, that it's getting into your audio circuits through your microphone cable. And if you put some RF chokes at the microphone input, that might be enough to solve the problem, if that's what's causing it.
Okay. And to give me just a little more information, what I did get the reports back were that the audio was cutting out. It would be the guy did it, and I'll just do it for you. It would be like I am talking now, in and out, if that gives you any more of a hint.
Okay. Again, unfortunately, once you let RF into a transmitter, it's capable of doing all kinds of mysterious, weird, and wacky things. I had a gentleman on a 10-meter net that I used to be net control operator, and he came on, and it was just noise and dropouts and noise, and we talked about it, and he put the RF chokes, and he was sounding great. Not saying that that's your case, but it's possible. If RF gets into audio circuits, there could be safety measures to disallow for overload, and so it could cut out the microphone amp at certain points. So I wouldn't at all be surprised if that could give you cutouts as well.
And how about getting a shock at the microphone end? Does that give you any other insight?
Yes, that's incredibly indicative of having common mode in your shack, because it's going to ground and you're ground. Otherwise you don't really make that much contact with the metal of your radios and such. The closest contact most people have with metal of a radio is the microphone. And so if you're getting these little sparks in your in your lips and such, it means that there's live RF that shouldn't be on your microphone.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, gotcha. All right. Yeah, I'm beginning to have some hope here. Well, if I can just divert for a minute, whatever happened to Dick, who used to run this net here? I'm just curious.
Okay, whoever's trying to get through, I appreciate the attempt, but unfortunately, about 98% noise. I can just barely make out that there's a person talking behind the noise. But going back to John, unfortunately, Dick passed away the end of April, I believe.
I'm very sorry to hear that. I never met him in person, but I've asked him some theoretical questions. One night, and an amazing response. And that wasn't that long ago. Was this something sudden, or was he fighting something?
Well, for about a month or so, things were not going very well. He had some health issues. He had to leave the tech net, and then. One day, his son came onto the technical net to explain that he had passed away that day. So it came as a shock to all of us here who listened to him and respected him.
Yeah, again, my condolences to your group. Like I said, I've listened to him and asked him some questions and. Right on point, the gentleman. Very sorry. I suspected that when you made your initial introduction tonight, the way you said, and those you said that passed on, and then you mentioned Dick, and that could be taken passed on as left the hobby, left the state, or could be what it was meant to be. So I caught that. All right. Thank you for informing me.
You're welcome, John. Unfortunately, some of the smartest guys who've passed through the technical net, Eric, John, and Mel, K2KEY, and now Dick. So it's been a very bad trend lately.
I think that station isn't even trying to get to us. I think we're getting some sort of skip or something.
No, there's no skip. No, there's no skip over
here. Okay, I don't quite know what the other gentleman has on his mind. I heard bits and pieces, but I didn't hear any ID. We basically have two repeaters. We have W2VL. We have Plainview. Other than that, he can connect through IRLP if he's interested. And, of course, we do have EchoLink. So those are the other options for whoever that might be.
What's the call sign for your EchoLink frequency? What's the call sign on your EchoLink?
It is W2VL-R.
So, Mr. Lima, there's Romeo, correct?
Correct. Okay, you're free to join EchoLink. I monitor it regularly. When I see you on there, I'll ask you if you want to say something through EchoLink. Anyway, John, thank you for participating tonight. I hope you come back and tell us your discoveries. Or come back if you have any other questions. You know where we are.
Absolutely, absolutely. I didn't catch your first name.
My name is Roy, Romeo Oscar Yankee.
Roy, thanks so much for your input. I'm glad you took over the net, and you fill his shoes very nicely. Roy, thanks again, and thank you to everybody else on the net. November 2, Zulu Charlie, I'll be listening.
Very good. So, once again, this is AC2GS, and my name is Roy, and this is the Limark Technical Net. If anyone has any questions of a technical nature, please, this is the time and the place. Give me your first name and your call sign.
WA2BIU, this is Barry.
Barry recognized. You got a question for us tonight, Barry?
Well, I first wanted to comment on the previous discussion. I'm just setting up a new shack because I haven't really had a shack to use except for field day, and unfortunately it was canceled this year, and I felt bad, and so I said I can't go on like this without operating at least once a year, so I'm buying new stuff and setting it up. But I did buy an Astron power supply and was rated at 35 amps, VS35, MAP, something like that. And I also don't have an antenna outdoors yet, so I just bought an MFJ1621, which is that small little box that sits on the desk and has like a little tuner in it and with a little extendable whip. And I found out that when I was keying on CW, the voltage was dropping in the power supply. So I thought that the supply may have been defective. For certain bands, it was bad enough to actually drop 2 volts with the key down, and the rig was shutting off because it was dropping below the minimum voltage to operate the rig. So I spoke with the people in where I bought it from in Ham Radio Outlet, and I spoke with Astron, and they thought that it could be that RF is getting in there. They thought that the ratings of this 35-amp thing should not drop. The rig is only drawing 20, and it should be rock solid at the rated voltage of 13.8 or whatever you set it at. It's variable. And it's unacceptable that a supply could drop by 2 volts like that. So I sent it back. And the Astron fellow, said to send it back. And then I went up to the next highest model, which is the 50-amp model, also because I thought maybe I'll operate 2 meters power from the same supply and also the HF rig. And when I keyed with that, everything was solid, rock solid. I tried a bunch of bands, and everything was fine. Then I just last week got this 2-meter radio now, which is a Yaesu 7250, and it puts out 50 watts, and it draws 10 amps. It's supposed to draw 10 amps. And now when I key down, I'm noticing that high is again dropping about a volt. So in relation to the previous discussion, when RF gets into something, it can cause problems. And I don't know if Astron is yet aware. I have to now call them and video it. But they need to be made aware that their supplies are susceptible to RF interference, which, since they market to the ham community.
Repeater. Timeout. Repeater. Timeout. Cancel.
Limark TechNet tonight at 8 o'clock. This is the W2VL repeater.
Sorry about that. I hope it wasn't cut off. I'm not sure what the last thing I said was, but at any rate, so I'm just saying that at the previous discussion that RF can cause problems even in power supplies, and it has to be checked. And it could be a design flaw that they're not blocking the RF when they're marketing to the ham community. I'll let it drop down that I wanted to discuss something else, but I thought maybe I'll just ask you for your comments.
WB2EAD with a question on it.
Yes, Ed, fine. You can ask your question. I just want to point out to Kaz KD2GNZ, the gentleman with the rather noisy signal who's now on Echolink. I will pause people for to get Kaz's comment in a little while, once we get this. So, Ed, you wanted to ask him a question?